You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome to My Vagina. This is Jessie Caron.
This is Rebecca Frank. And here we are again having our current hysterical, and infuriating conversation about our lives as vagina-having organisms.
All content made up on the spot, but probably researched. And just kidding, fools, it's definitely researched.
We got another review. It's 5 stars. These women are creating a much needed platform for all things vagina and beyond. I really loved their banter and their unfiltered approach to relevant and fascinating topics. I'm learning a lot from what they bring to the table and really looking forward to hearing more episodes. Wow. Thanks, Louie Louisa. You a star.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We really appreciate all your reviews, so please keep doing that.
More, please.
So I haven't told this story. I meant to. This past New Year's, I went out with some friends, and it was just like me and one of my other girlfriends who ended up like late night at Dinoco. I went up to go order us some drinks. As I was waiting for the bartender, I felt something grab my ass. As a lady who's had people think that they can just touch me anywhere in public before, mm-hmm. I turned expecting a certain
dude
thing.
A dude.
I expected to see a dude standing there, and it was not. It was this woman was standing there, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I did this thing that I feel like all women do, where I just got confused and was like, I must be crazy. Mm-hmm. I must be crazy that this happened. Because I've definitely like turned and like I've had guys do that, and I've immediately like gone after them. Like I threw a beer in one guy's face because he grabbed my ass. But then he told me he didn't do it. And I did have the same reaction where I was like, oh, my God, maybe I'm a crazy person. Maybe that didn't happen, which is bonkers. But we've been taught this through our society that we're crazy and to not believe our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I look at this girl and I'm like, what the fuck? And I was like, all right, I just feel uncomfortable. So I moved over a person because I didn't really know how to address it.
Yeah, it's awkward because we expect more from women.
Totally.
When it comes to this kind of stuff?
Even though it was clearly like a butt grab and a lift, I was like, maybe she just bumped into me, which is it's crazy, you know?
I'm imagining how that would have like accidentally occurred.
But exactly.
Yeah.
But still,
yeah.
Like,
but I would have done the same thing.
You know, and I was a little tipsy, so I was like, whatever. Anyway, so I move over and I get the drink and I come back and my friend goes, did that girl just grab your ass? And I was like, she did, right? She grabbed my ass.
It's like a cup and grab.
You can see it. And I was like, she did. And I was like, I thought I was crazy. And she was like, no, I just watched it happen. And I was like, oh my God, should I say something? And in all her glory, she taps the girl and goes, excuse me, you just grabbed my friend's ass. Not cool.
Yeah.
And the girl goes, no, I didn't. And my friend was like, you did. I watched you do it. And I was like, and I literally felt your hand on my ass.
Yeah.
And her friend comes up and goes, no, I know her. She wouldn't do that. But your friend's ass is amazing. So if she did do it, then it was warranted.
And you should take it as a compliment.
And I was like, all right, cool. Girls, where are your zippers for the frat boys that are living under the skin that you're wearing?
Yeah,
because
seriously.
What kind of logic is that?
So insane. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like women don't think that they have to abide by the same standards as men because like there isn't that power dynamic that exists in the world. And so it's not necessarily like you weren't necessarily like, it's like a different thing. You weren't necessarily scared of her, but like, it's about like autonomy, like bodily autonomy and consent. It doesn't matter if you have a, what you have. Well, you know what I mean?
Also, no matter what, in that scenario, it's still a power trip.
Right.
You know, because in that scenario, I felt uncomfortable because somebody grabbed my person, a person that I didn't know. Shut up. Somebody grabbed me and my body without my consent, and I didn't know them.
Oh, totally.
We had no background. We didn't have like a friendship. You know, again, I've said this before, but in my household, we know we can walk around and like smack a butt because I trust them and I know them and I know it's like fun and tomfoolery.
Right.
I never get malarkey. To use that. But like, yeah, there's something about somebody taking this and being like, I am above you and I can do whatever I want to you.
Right.
I don't have established boundaries with you. You don't get to touch me.
And then she gaslit you.
And then she gaslit me.
And so did her friend.
Oh my God.
They both sucked. Keep your hands to yourself.
Keep your fucking hands to yourself unless you have established boundaries with somebody that you know personally will not be offended by that.
She knew that butt wasn't her friend's butt. She grabbed it anyway.
How did I get hysteria? Am I going to go to heaven like Uncle Buster?
No, but it is believed that female sex moisture turns venomous if not released through regular climax.
What?
Hey. Today we're going to talk about hysteria?
Hysteria.
Otherwise known as the wandering unit.
The wandering unit. No, that's the problem is we don't have the unit.
Otherwise known as the wandering uterus. Otherwise known as a bored uterus.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Hysteria was a mental condition attributed specifically to uterus problems, and it became a catch-all diagnosis for any woman's health problems that doctors couldn't figure out. So, first of all, that's the laziest shit I've ever heard.
it's like irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, just from like centuries
Except
ago.
Except just blame it on the uterus.
Yeah. Oh, you don't feel good and we don't have an explanation for it. It must be this thing that we don't have a cure or an explanation for at all.
Yeah. So let's like, so people just showed up with pitchforks to the entrance of the vagina.
Yeah.
You know.
Stab. So I got some etymology for you.
Bring it.
So it's from the New Latin hysteria. From the Latin hystericus, from ancient Greek hystericos, which is a suffering in the uterus, which became the word hysterical. It was defined, as Jesse said, defined as a nervous disease in around 1801 and coined in medical Latin as an abstract noun from the Greek hystera, meaning womb, and from the Proto-Indo-European utero, meaning abdomen, womb, stomach. It was initially defined as a neurotic condition, particular to women, and was believed to be connected to some sort of dysfunction with the uterus. With the added abstract noun ending in IA, it refers to a general sense of unhealthy emotion or excitement, which was dating back to 1839. Then we can connect this to the word hysterectomy, which is the surgical removal of the uterus, which stems from the Greek word hystera, referring to the uterus or the womb. So the creation of the word hysterectomy is directly related to the word hysterical and is therefore no coincidence that a hysterectomy was considered a cure for the most extreme cases of hysteria.
So let's just get rid of it and scoop it out of her.
Yeah. So we don't think that the feminization of insanity, because that's basically what hysteria was, applies only to the word hysterical. I found out that the word loony comes from lunacy, which refers to a monthly periodic insanity thought to be triggered by the cycle of the moon and only applied to women.
Wow.
So
that checks out.
Yeah.
That checks out.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Mm-hmm. So basically everything just stems back to women.
Yeah. Anything that has to do with a lack of mental well-being or an extreme reaction to things or whatever, those words are always, they're always like feminized.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
you can't figure out why we're different from you, so it must be wrong.
Yeah.
In terms of gender.
And you must be crazy.
Yeah. Because men coined those terms.
Right, so. Exactly.
Hysteria makes me laugh because the symptoms from the quote-unquote condition could like be almost anything.
Yeah.
From anxiety to melancholy to bursts of emotions, headaches, tremors, convulsions. It was essentially like you either cared too much or you cared too little, or you had trouble breathing or you breathed too much.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like in any way, you weren't a quote unquote proper woman. Mm-hmm. This idea that we're a monolith and that all women should behave the exact same way. And if you are outside of that norm at all, then clearly you're hysterical.
Yeah. yeah, it makes total sense that the wandering uterus just, you know, gets bored.
Just love it. And think of it like with like a little knapsack crossed over its shoulder. Just like, where am I going to go now? Visit the brain, perhaps.
Let me check out the intestines. What are they like?
Hang out with the coccyx.
And like essentially creates an empty void in the body, like fucking Operation or the Kool-Aid Man.
God, the Kool-Aid Man. Yeah.
It just goes up there and plays trampoline on the lungs back and forth. Can you imagine if you just had like an organ that just like wandered your body fucking around with you and was like pulling practical jokes on the kidneys?
Right.
Leaves like a Smirnoff Ice in part of the body and is like, you've been iced, motherfucker.
Oh my God, that would be so crazy.
You know, I think they really missed an opportunity here to just hold women upside down and jiggle her until the uterus fell back into place.
I bet they did that.
No, as I was saying, yeah, I
would bet all of my money that for sure, when we think about like these different, like,
I know, I regret it now.
No, it's okay. I'm so glad you said it, because now I have this vision in my head of these doctors just like, she's still hysterical. And she's like upside down, like, what is happening?
We haven't put the puzzle back in its place. Wow. Yeah. So hysteria is now linked to clinical anxiety and depression. Instead, and is now, I guess it's now called conversion disorder.
Yeah, the word hysterical was taken out of the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders in 1980, 39 years ago. That's not that long.
Yeah, so hysteria actually goes back 4,000 years. In ancient Egypt, that was the first concept of the wandering womb. I guess it's kind of a room.
Yeah.
And then 2,400 years ago, in ancient Greece, Hippocrates actually coined the term hysteria.
Do you know what else he coined?
What?
The Hippocratic Oath, which says, do no harm.
And he did a lot of harm.
A lot of harm.
And FYI, this guy got a lot of shit wrong.
Nice going, asshole.
He was one of the first ones to write about how it wasn't anchored and could just wander the body.
So now it's like a boat.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't like throw its anchor out, just forgot. Now it's just like, la, 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 la.
It could even be described back then as a vengeful or mischievous uterus that detached itself from the pelvic region and wandered the body.
Wow. And it is the origin of all disease.
Yeah, of course it is.
Apparently, Plato and Hippocrates thought that the uterus would just lurch all around the body and upset our delicate constitution. Oh my God. So there was the suggested treatment back then was to be pregnant all the time, which would keep the womb and this idea of womanhood and like the connection of womanhood and motherhood secure, which just is, we talk about this all the time, that so much our only value is our ability to have babies, which makes me useless.
Yeah, so the idea was that your uterus would be less bored as long as you kept a baby in it. But the caveat to that,
you're just like playing solitaire. This game sucks.
The caveat to that is that right when you're done being pregnant, it caused the uterus to act up again. So like you said, you just had to stay pregnant for like forever.
But then what happens when, I mean, I guess back then you didn't live that long beyond like menopause and stuff like that.
That is the saddest thing you have ever said.
I know.
You're basically like, well, you won't have to give them babies for too long. You can just die.
And it'll be your uterus that killed you. Well, because did you talk about this Greek physician, Galen?
I only have a little bit on him. Go.
Yeah, because, you know, on the other side or on the same side of that, of always being pregnant, he thought that that the root of all female problems was a woman's unfertilized seed, and they would basically rot inside of her body and become toxic. So this idea that like any egg that we didn't use turned septic and would kill us.
Oh, my God. And according to those societal standards, you have to get married first. You have to be married. And so like, what if you're not married or can't get married? Do you just like put a leash on your uterus?
They would have midwives.
Oh my God.
Come and diddle you.
Actually, I have something to say about that.
Tell me.
I found something that refutes that.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was very much a bummer. Apparently, the only person who wrote about that, Rachel Maines is the author. Of the technology of orgasm. She's the one
we talked about in our menstruation or in our
masturbation
episode, menage et moi.
And also in our endometriosis one,
right?
Sarah Quinn was the original person to tell us. And apparently this is a common theme that's been going on, but Rachel Maines is the only author who wrote about it
extensively about the treatment of forcing vigorous pelvic massages and manual stimulation. But according to a lot of people are refuting that now, a lot of historians who are saying that they checked all of her sources and that they don't check out. And not only that, but in an interview, Maine said that she had heard variations of the paper's criticism before and that her argument in the technology of orgasm was really only a hypothesis and that she never claimed to have evidence that this was really the case. So Hallie Lieberman of the Georgia Institute of Technology, after checking Maine sources and finding no evidence that physicians used electromechanical vibrators, said the success of technology of orgasm serves as a cautionary tale for how easily falsehoods can become embedded in the humanities, because this has become very popular since Maines's book.
Right.
And even Maines was like, I thought people were going to attack it right away, and it's taken them 20 years to even check it.
Wow. So this movie Hysteria that I just watched the other day was based on a lie.
Yeah. And I mean,
I can't believe it.
And they suggest too, they're like, the only reason that we think that it got this popular is because people wanted to believe it.
I mean, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
And it fits in with like how we think about women's sexuality being taken from them and not acknowledged. Like this idea that women don't have sex for pleasure,
yeah,
which is something that still sticks around today.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it does make you wonder, I guess, sometimes we have a situation and we try and explain it and facts fit. And it makes sense, but totally, it's not necessarily accurate.
Right. And
wow, I feel so crushed.
That being said, I also found a Victorian advertisement where the man has his hand up his skirt and is like
doing something.
Yeah. And says that he can do massage treatment to cure female hysteria.
I mean, listen, there's always been pervs. Mm-hmm. So even if it wasn't the like accepted thing that a bunch of doctors did, like, yeah, there might have been some pervs out there.
Totally. And,
you know,
they're also not suggesting that it didn't necessarily happen.
Right.
They
just that her sources are not accurate.
Totally. So people are now going back.
You know what she is? Hysterical.
Can't Rebecca, believe it. That was hysterical. I just want to bring that up because, I mean, listen, we're not fucking historians and no, we're doing our research and we're trying to cite our sources. And so I came across this and was like, oh, shit, this, yeah, is a common belief now in our society. And lots of people have brought it up. Vice has brought it up. Mother Jones brought it up. Samantha Bee. And that was because that was the information that was given to us. And,
right,
you know, now she's saying that it was just a hypothesis. And these historians are like, cool, but like, we read your text and you didn't suggest that it was a hypothesis. You suggested it as fact. And now, right, we have to go back and check it.
Okay. But then let's look at that in the context of everything we always talk about, which is that this had to do with women and women's health. Mm-hmm. And so it was out there for 20 years before people checked it.
Yeah. That's also a good point.
You know, like, because it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's not as historically pertinent to, right, be correct when you're talking about women and women's health and the history of women's health, because women's stories don't matter. Thanks.
That was me snapping.
I got some snaps.
Like how you said that, like it was from a stranger, like a strange audience and not the one person sitting in front of you.
I know. According to the French physician August Faber, who said in 1883, as a general rule, all women are hysterical and every woman carries with her the seeds of hysteria.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, Aristotle held the belief that a woman was a deformed or mutilated male and that the womb was a rather more intimate version of the Achilles heel, if you will. Apparently, after the fall of the Roman Empire, a Byzantine physician by the name of Paul of, I never know how to say this, Aegina, A-E-G-I-N-A. It's like, it sounds like the Aegean Sea.
I would say, yeah, I would just say of Aegean, but let's just call him Paul of Sandwich, like the Earl.
Cool. Paul of Sandwich proposed an imaginative cure. Make the lady sneeze and no joke, shout at her.
No, oh my God.
Shout at her.
Oh my God, I found a really good one. Wait, wait, wait. So the theory about the roaming uteri was supported by Plato and shit and referred to it as hysterical suffocation. And the way that they would get the uterus to go back into place was by placing good smells near the vagina,
yes,
and bad smells near the mouth and having them sneeze. Like, the fuck is that? First of all, your vagina doesn't have a nose. That's right. The first thing.
So in the Middle Ages, hysteria was tied to sorcery, witchcraft, and demon possession. So one of the treatments was, naturally, exorcism.
Right, duh. It always comes back to exorcism.
Obviously, they knew more than, like, 4,000 years ago, but still, hysteria was essentially about exclusion. So it's always kind of about excluding women or people who aren't normal. If every other disease was ruled out and doctors couldn't come up with a diagnosis, they assumed it was a disease brought by something intangible and not, that was a weird way to say that word, intangible and not understood and evil and therefore the result of the devil, like most women. Burn them!
Burn them and their uteruses, wandering or otherwise.
Yeah, I guess in medieval times, people with, it seems like people with endometriosis were probably just believed as witches right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The craziest thing about those like witch stuff is like they would like put them in a fire or in the water.
Well, if you drowned, you weren't a witch.
Yeah, but then you're dead anyway. So who the fuck cares? You know, it doesn't fucking matter. The fire too. It's like if you don't burn, then you're a witch and they're gonna fucking kill you anyways.
Right.
But everyone burns.
Obviously.
You know?
Yeah, you think they'd notice that after like a few hundred that they were like,
wait a second.
Oh, they're all dying. There are no witches, you fucking idiots.
Our average is not very good.
I think it all stems too from the widespread belief at the time about original sin and fucking Eve, because some guy wrote a story about how he hated women. So like, clearly she's evil and she stole an apple from a serpent.
I mean, first of all, who the fuck would do that? I don't care how hungry you are. You don't take an apple from a serpent because they'll eat you. Anyway. It's the Garden of Eden. There's other stuff there.
So many things.
So much.
I would avoid that apple tree. Women are too smart to eat that apple.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, women were just, you know, impressionable and more naive. And so then more influenced by evil forces, which is hilarious to me because if you're evil, then are you impressionable? I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's a really good question.
And yeah, so exorcism treatment usually meant mental and physical torture. And if women even survived this, it would permanently scar them in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Because the vagina is the entry point for demons. That's where evil gets in.
Oh, in your vagina. That's how it happens.
Evil gets in your vagina.
Oh, that's why we wear underwear.
Yes. You get it now.
To protect from the evil.
Exactly.
I can't believe it took me this long.
Let's go into the Victorian era because.
All right. This is the best era. Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't want to live there. No, no. Fuck the Victorian era. That shit was gnarly.
I meant the most interesting.
Yeah. Totally fucking weird.
It was unbecoming of a lady to act up or show anger, lest you be diagnosed with hysteria and hauled away.
Right.
I guess in the late 1800s, women started carrying around fucking smelling salts in case they swooned or fainted because the wandering uterus had caused them to pass out, obviously.
Right.
Or it could have been the corsets and the societal pressure. You tell me. Science.
Hashtag science.
It was believed by some that the smelling salts would force the uterus back into place and that you would put perfume around the vagina because it would lure the vagina or it would lure the uterus back down towards the vagina.
But did the smelling salts smell bad?
The smelling salt. So they believed that the uterus was repulsed. Smelling salts have ammonia in them.
Right. Yeah. But what's with the sneezing?
I don't know.
That's the thing. Like
I didn't see that.
I quote unquote understand this idea of like, in the world that makes no sense of being like, we want you to come here. Let me put these roses by your vulva. And then like, I'm going to put poop under your nose. But like maybe the sneeze, you know, like sometimes like if you sneeze, you might fart at the same time.
All the time.
Yeah. So like maybe the sneeze is like to force the uterus. It's like jolting to go towards the nice sweet smells. You know, but that's only if your roaming uterus roams up. Like, what if it decides to go visit your knee?
What if it goes left?
Then if you sneeze, it might go down to your toe. And then what will you do?
There was somebody who was talking about how, like, if it went left, it was this. If it went right, it was this. Could be wrong.
It's like choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Uterus edition. We should write that children's book. So hysteria as like an organized thing, it seems like, was really... was described in a more official type way in 1880 by Jean-Martin Charcot. This is what's so wild to me. So this is, you know, the good smells, the bad smells. Then Galen with his idea that it was the retention of the female seed within the womb that was to blame for whatever symptoms women were describing. There were other people who believed that the retention of menstrual blood was responsible for the female problems. But like, as it turns out, the only way to fix this was marriage.
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today.
Yeah.
Because marriage means sex.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's improper to have sex outside of marriage, but lascivious women were thought...
Nice word.
Thanks. I'm trying to figure out how to work that in. were thought to have hysteria because they had a buildup of fluids, right? Oh, that needed to be released, which can only be released by the penis, right? So now my brain is going all like... all over the place, and I'm thinking to myself, so you have a female patient come in, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, you're hysterical, you need to get fucked, right?
Oh my God.
So you send them home to their husband, and their husband's like, well, my wife's hysterical, I gotta fuck her. Well, what if she, like, women still said no in the Victorian era.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm thinking that this is kind of where, like, you know, people started thinking marital rape wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, you're not raping your wife, you're trying to cure her of her hysteria. Fair. Right? You're doing her a favor. You're getting rid of the fluids. You know, and they were like, oh, the semen is going to fix you. But it's like, as we know before from what not to put in your vagina, we have to like regain our pH balance.
Yeah.
After the semen.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't seem like it's fixing. That seems like it comes in there, it does its shit, and then we have to fix it.
Well, we always have to fix
it. We always have to fix it. I know.
Yeah. So also in the Victorian period, doctors attributed hysteria to the dangerous behaviors of intellectual women.
Yep. Feminism.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
So Greer Theus, I am most likely saying his name wrong, of Washington and Lee University, said all these foot-powered sewing machines and increased literacy rates were tearing women's delicate minds to shreds. Mm-hmm. Luckily, there had also been advancements in the treatment of hysteria, the water cure, aka the pelvic douche, which was essentially a fire hose to the pussy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'll do ya.
So they like aimed a jet of water at the inner thighs.
Yeah. One thing that I found that was super interesting is that this guy that we had mentioned before, Jean-Martin Charcot, mm-hmm. who's French. Yeah. That's why I have to say his name like that. Because he's from France. But he was teaching all of his students about, you know, hysteria and all this other stuff, and how he believed that hysteria was caused by like an internal injury that affected the nervous system. And do you know who one of his students was?
Freud.
Fucking Freud. That Sigmund. Motherfucker. Yeah.
Goddamn Freud.
So Freud, as we know, was the founder of psychoanalysis. He wrote a whole mass of studies on female hysteria between 1880 and 1915. And he developed Charcot's theory of hysteria further than it had been before. So basically, he thought that rather than being a physical injury in the body, hysteria was caused by a, quote, psychological scar produced through trauma or repression, end quote. But if we dig through it and really think into it, Freud believed that the moment of trauma stems from a woman's realization that actually, in fact, she doesn't have a penis.
Oh, my God.
And that's, we're hysterical because we thought that we had penises and then we looked down and there wasn't one. And like, that was my organizing principle. And now what do I do? You know,
what do I do without my penis?
I'll tell you what you do.
Oh,
you marry a penis.
Oh, right.
You become pregnant with a penis. Mm-hmm. You birth a penis.
Oh, OK. Right.
And then you get pregnant with another penis.
Totally.
That's what you do.
Our only
you
job
just have
in
to
life.
Replace the penis.
Replace the penis with a smaller penis.
Right. Stand in penis.
So I thought at first Sigmund Freud actually rolled in and was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Men can get hysteria too. And then he flip-flopped.
Yeah, they always flip-flop.
I mean, of course, because it's Freud said that it was caused by someone not having mature enough libido, which led them to not having sex because that's
right.
Freud.
Right.
And everything was sexual. I'm really afraid to know what his life really consisted of, honestly.
Yeah.
I guess they tried him and Charcot.
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 Kind of sound like you're throwing up a little bit.
Tried to reclassify many of hysteria symptoms into new diagnosis and like
separate them out,
classify it as something psychological and neurological and say that men could also have it.
But then they realized that men have penises.
Exactly. And Freud also diagnosed himself with hysteria at one point and said that male hysteria was linked to Oedipus syndrome. The childhood desire to sleep with the mother and
that's
to kill
right.
the father.
Yeah.
And homosexuality. And so often the diagnosis on, they were often wrong and harmful, but was still resistant around the concept of male hysteria from the rest of the medical community that Freud wound up flip-flopping because of the pressure.
Right.
And called it a feminine disease again, which is probably where he was like, oh, you don't have a penis.
Yeah, that's why. It's because you don't have a dick.
You lost your penis.
Where did it go?
Where did your penis go?
Where did you put it? I told you to keep control of the penis.
Keep your dick in a box.
Keep it in a box.
In a safe box.
So by the late 1800s, so around this time that we're talking about, you know, as we've said, women could be marked as hysterical for any number of things. But one of the biggest one was belonging to the burgeoning feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
Which was actually brought up in the movie Hysteria that I watched as part of my research, starring Maggie Gyllenhaal and someone, Darcy. Hugh Darcy, is that his name?
Sure.
Yeah, it is. Hugh Darcy. Not to be confused with Mark Darcy, the fictional character in Bridget Jones's Diary. Hugh Darcy is far more attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see? Anyway, so I saw this movie and Maggie Gyllenhaal's character was like a feminist and really into women's equality. Yeah. And she came from money and her dad was one of the ones who performed masturbatory services to hysterical women, which now is in question. We don't know if that happened or not. And she punched a police officer in the face and went to jail and was put on trial. And one of the things that she was tried for was being hysterical. Mm-hmm. And the thing was that if she was hysterical beyond being fixed, she would have a hysterectomy. Spoiler alert, they fall in love and he, you know, speaks on her behalf. And
oh
then
my God,
they,
you fucking ruined the movie.
Sorry.
Sorry, I'm feeling a little aggressive. My uterus is in my torso right now. Poking around.
Just going for a jaunt around the neighborhood. Anyway, in this idea of feminism being, you know, and women's equality being a sign of hysteria, there was an article called On Militant Hysteria, which was written by the celebrated physician Sir A.E. Wright, says that there is a mix-up with the women's movement and mental disorder. He wrote a letter to the London Times editor saying that these women, aka feminists, wanted to live in a world where, quote, man and woman shall everywhere work side by side at the self same tasks and for the self same pay. So they want to be recognized for their value outside of motherhood and marriage. Imagine that.
Idiots.
But this desire that they had was their sickness. And according to Wright, their self-esteem was the poison. So he was like, yeah, peace is possible. But all these women just need to go away and seek rest beyond the sea, each one in the house of her husband.
Or they need to just be less of yourself.
Yeah.
Be less confident. Bye. Less you. Do what we tell you.
They should live as domestic a life as possible.
Yeah.
And never touch pen, brush, or pencil as long as you live.
Put a baby in it.
Put a baby in it.
Put a baby
but
in it.
But a penis baby.
Put a penis just baby a in penis it or it baby. Is fucking worthless.
It's worthless and it's going to have a uterus wandering around and it's going to spend its whole... You know what? I figured it out. Mm. The wandering uterus is just looking for the penis that it lost.
Oh my God, you're so right. I thought it was looking for the lost baby.
No, the penis.
It's looking for the penis.
It's just looking for the penis.
Apparently in the early 1900s, like, things were still pretty messed up and there was still... Even though exorcism had fallen out of favor, there was still... smelling salts and injecting things into the uterus or cutting or burning away of the genitals with fire or chemicals.
Jesus.
And Dr. John Harvey Kellogg was particularly supportive of female genital mutilation.
Was he the guy behind the cereal? God, I hope not.
God, that sounds... I fucking hope not.
Me too.
I hope he didn't get busy enough to do both of these things. And also using...
Burning women and making cornflakes.
And he also used electroconvulsive or shock therapy and many other nauseating things. Hysteria as a medical diagnosis plummeted drastically in the 1920s, in part because of the women's suffrage. But also a huge factor was that so many different people, women and men across different cultures and countries, started presenting symptoms of PTSD because of World War I, during and after, and also more so during and after World War II.
Right.
And so that doctors could no longer deny its association with trauma. And that it also affected men, as long as it wasn't called hysteria, I'm sure.
Right.
Because now we have the term mass hysteria. So hysterical neuroses was still mentioned in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the Manual of Mental Disorders, the second one, which was released in 1968. Mm-hmm. And then the one you said in 1980, the DSM-3, that's when they took it out.
And the thing about it is, just because it's taken out of a journal or like out of a diagnostic manual doesn't mean that the history of this word has left the lexicon.
Not
right?
At all.
So like, think back even recently, like we think about the fucking 2016 election and Megyn Kelly being fascinated with sex, right? And the way that that people called Hillary Clinton shrill and hysterical.
And also Jason Miller, who called Kamala Harris hysterical when the Senate Intelligence Committee called Attorney General Jeff Sessions to testify about the Russian contacts. He said that she was hysterical. And because Kamala Harris just asked him questions and she was dogged about it, but she wasn't. But she has every right to be.
Yeah. I mean, let's think about the Kavanaugh hearings.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if we're thinking about what hysterical looks like, Kavanaugh pretty much fits it, right? He was completely not stable in terms of his reaction to things. He was sweating, seeming uncomfortable, raising his voice. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Christine Blasey Ford was calm, answered, and she was the one who had the trauma, right? And like, but it was okay for him to behave that way because that was, you know, it's just manhood and he was being falsely accused of something. But she's still hysterical for bringing up something from forever ago that supposedly didn't happen.
Right.
Which is fucking bullshit.
Twice as hard.
Because you can't give them anything.
Yeah.
Because they will discount everything. And even if you give them nothing, they still discount everything. Just looking up to this election coming up in 2020, which I'm petrified about because it's already so ugly. But just watching people dismiss Kamala Harris, dismiss Elizabeth Warren, dismiss Kirsten Gillibrand, and never asking themselves, I mean, and Cory Booker, but never asking themselves why and why they have these, why they're complaining about their voices or the fact that they're shrill or, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, questioning their record when we wouldn't question other people's records on the same thing.
Yeah.
This is all still part of the history of hysteria. And it's the way that we discount women's feelings, women's experiences, women's qualifications. And I've heard this from so many people that we are not ready for a woman or a person of color, right? Mm-hmm. And that we need to just have a white dude in there so we can get rid of Trump. First of all, go fuck yourself. But this dude, and I try not to get involved in these conversations because it's not worth it, but he's on about how we're not ready for a female president. And I looked at him and I said, but we voted for one.
Yeah.
So we are. Right. And it's that we
or
have
not
a,
that one.
Right.
It's never that one.
Of course. But the fact of the matter is, the popular vote voted for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that the way that our electoral college works discounts the votes of a lot of people. And there are more Democratic votes in this country than Republican votes, period, end of story. Mm-hmm. It's the way that our system is set up that disempowers people. It's the history of having two senators for a state, regardless of population, of gerrymandering, of all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me that we're not ready for a woman president. And so we should run fucking Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Give me a fucking break.
We voted for one.
We voted for one overwhelmingly. And we'll do it again. But all of this history of discounting women by using specifically gendered language that doubts women's sanity is how we ended up with that woman grabbing your ass and you thinking you were crazy.
Yep. And also, like, not to pivot super hard back into
pivot.
Our whole society is indifferent to women and what their opinions and bodies are, but especially the medical community, that because that affects our care. And you know, I know as a woman going to the doctors, I'm still a little, you know, everyone I think is a little shrouded in the same fear and like shame that they have, or the condescension from your healthcare. Not always. I'm not suggesting.
Of course
that.
Not.
I've had lovely doctors, amazing doctors. Anyway, I just sounded like Trump. The best.
Bigly doctors.
But I think overall, that's kind of been surrounding the female body.
Right.
I mean, up until 2010, Canada allowed medical students to practice pelvic exams on unconscious women without their consent who had come in for gynecological surgery.
Wow. Well, that's like
Larry Nassar.
Yeah. Oh, like it's like the husband stitch, you know, like in childbirth.
Oh,
when they stitch up because they want, you know, doctors talk to the husband and they want their wives a little bit tighter after childbirth. It's like, fucking just push a penis out, maybe.
I don't know why I have such painful periods, but I still to this day remember that the only solution is always to be like, just do birth control. Just have extra Aleve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a cure-all.
No.
in Ask Me About My Uterus, Abby Norman wrote about her chronic illnesses and the complete like disregard and how she was mistreated. She writes that not even the most modern women have completely broken free from hysteria. Hysteria lives in all of us. A little cough that makes us question our perceptions of ourselves, the innermost truth of our bodies, our very minds. So I think that kind of sums up. We just kind of grin and bear it because we have to.
Because so in that book, and this is not a spoiler, but the way that she managed to get herself diagnosed was that she did all of the research herself. Mm-hmm. She got a job somewhere where she had access to materials.
Yeah.
And she was able to put all of the pieces together. And considering how many women suffer from endometriosis, there's no reason why she should have had to advocate for herself in that way. And I think that's one of the reasons, if you look at, if you think about endometriosis being a white woman's disease or a disease, a privileged person's disease, because you have to have the time and the ability and the resources to advocate for yourself. Because the medical community doesn't take, by and large, and again, not everybody, but by and large, doesn't take women's pain seriously, women's medical conditions seriously. I mean, there's a whole thing in the news right now about the about the fact that the idea late-term abortion shouldn't even be used.
Oh my God.
But it's a way to disempower women. It's, you know...
Sorry.
No, it's... I mean, that's the perfect response.
Yeah. So how many things can I get out of if I just self-diagnose myself with female hysteria? Can I get out of jury duty for that?
Yeah, just like up.
I'm sorry, I'm hysterical.
I'm hysterical. I have hysteria. You might have heard of it. My uterus, like up in my shoulder right now.
If you can find it, I'll do jury duty.
Right? Come at me, judge. Thank you and good night.
And goodbye. If you've seen my uterus, please point it back in the direction of me.
Or just keep it.
Yeah, keep it. Fuck it. Who needs it?
Who needs that uterus anyways?
According to your diagnosis, hysteria seems to cover everything from insomnia to toothache. It's nothing more than a catch-all for dissatisfied women. Women forced to spend their lives on domestic chores and their prudish and selfish husbands who are unwilling or unable to make love to them properly.
Okay, well, we thought in an effort to undo all of the good work that we've done, demystifying the word hysteria, we would talk about our ridiculous pet peeves. So, yeah, take it away, Jesse.
Oh,
you know my number one pet peeve. Fucking cannot stand when people chew with their mouth open. It makes me... Oh my God.
She's like twitching right now. Thinking
about it makes me nauseous. It just... I'm sorry. It just... I don't know. It sets my whole body on fire. It's like I can hear it at 100 decibels louder than it actually is. It's insane. I've left transit before.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've gotten off buses and taken the next one before. Like if I forgot my headphones. I try really hard not to forget my headphones.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
If you ever see me with my finger jiggling my earlobe, it's because somebody is in the room and they're chewing with their mouth open and I'm trying to make a louder noise in my ear.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a technique.
It's bad. Yeah. Because I can't leave all the time.
Yeah, you can't always leave. It's true.
Sometimes it's people that I love.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to tell, like some people I don't know how to tell that they are making me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also not their fault. Like that is, because how do you tell somebody that it actually like gives you anxiety?
Right.
Without sounding like a fucking crazy person. And
hysterical,
then you've just,
hysterical.
And then you've made somebody else feel uncomfortable because that's just how they chew.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not their fault. Like,
and then maybe they're afraid to eat in front of you.
Yeah. Lots of people eat like that.
Yeah.
Lots of people smack their lips. Lots of cultures do it. And like, it's not on them. It's on me, but it's, yeah, I don't know. It's just a sound that feels like,
it's like an assault on your ears.
Nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate when people put the volume at an odd number.
What?
Like on the TV, if I'm putting the TV up or like a radio station and you can see the digital, like the number, it has to be on an even number.
That's so funny. I had no idea that was a thing.
It drives me nuts. So actually, I didn't even realize that I'd mentioned it to Eric. I'm sure that I had at some point because we were watching TV the other day and he was like, oh, nope. And he fixed it because it was like on 13. And I was like...
Do you know what that's from?
No, but it's been like that since I was, I remember this kid that I don't even know. We made out a few times in high school, but he used to make fun of me for it in high school. So that's when I first remember registering it, but I'm sure it was always like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because mine is, I feel like I've definitely heard of a lot of people who actually have a similar thing where it enrages them.
That's a thing. There's a word for it.
It's called like misophonia or something, but I can't say that out loud because it's...
Right. Right.
Sounds like crazy. A ridiculous fucking thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never heard... That's amazing. I love that. I love that.
It drives me nuts.
I'm not a big fan of people leaving the seat up.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
That's fucking gross. We just actually... I'm excited about it. At one of the bars I work at, we... changed the bathroom. So now, because we have two bathrooms, they used to be gendered and now they're not gendered anymore, which is awesome. Hooray. However, dudes fucking leave the seat up now all the time. I never had a problem in the bathroom because women were the only ones using it. But now every time I go in there, the seat's up. And it drives me nuts. Yeah. Like, just put it down. Use your foot. I don't care.
Use your foot, man.
Yeah.
Because you can sit and use your, fucking push your penis down. I can't stand.
Yeah.
I would love to. Yeah. It would make things a lot easier for me.
Yeah.
You know, I could just walk outside and fucking, you know, I'd wear a lot more skirts.
You need to get a sheenus.
A shiwi?
Okay. This is a huge one. When people cut their nails in public.
Oh, yeah. That,
it's like.
Well, because that's just fucking disgusting.
It's gross. But it's like so bad. So I used to date somebody who would cut his nails at the coffee table and like put the nail shavings into his ashtray, which was fucking disgusting. I have to have people shut the bathroom door. I get disgusted when I cut my own nails. Like, I put it off for so long because I hate the sound and like the flicking of the nails everywhere, and then you have to like search for the nail bits. Ugh. I just need like self-trimming nails. Science, please, can you make that happen?
Help
me.
Yeah. Oh, that's my pet peeve. That is my pet peeve for bartending.
Okay, tell me.
I fucking hate when people abuse the word excuse me. Because just because you're saying what is technically a polite term, you don't get to shout it at me and you don't get to repeat it over and over again until I respond to you.
Yep.
If I am in the middle of doing something, you do not get to roll up and interrupt me in a very aggressive, excuse me.
Yeah, especially like, what if, like, if my back is turned, don't be like, excuse me.
Right, just like, wait until I fucking turn around.
Yeah, I'll turn around and then I'll help you.
Oh my God.
I always just look at people and I'm just like, yeah, I'll help you when I'm finished. That's so obnoxious.
Hate it.
Yeah, that, and also when people ask me what I really do.
Yeah.
I will destroy.
I will kill you.
I will kill you. It is none of your fucking business. And no one goes to your job and asks you what you do.
You know what I just Fuck thought off. Of? You should I want to do this. I want to lean in one time and just be like, I don't know, man. I feel like I can trust you, you know? And so I'm going to divulge this information to you. I'm actually an undercover CIA operative. my main thing is assassinating people who asked me that stupid fucking question.
Yeah. Or just like end it at that and be like, and just walk away.
Yeah.
You know, and serve someone else a drink.
Yeah.
Just go, or like make like a little gun thing at them. Yeah. Genius.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to My Vagina.
It's time for us to slide on out of here.
God damn it.
Doesn't sound right when I do it.
I know. Places you can find us on Instagram at Welcome to My Vagina.
We're trying to get 1,000 followers to tell your friends. And Twitter at Welcome to My Vag.
We also have a website, welcometomyvagina.com, which leads you to my YouTube page, also Welcome to My Vagina.
Uh-huh. And there's a blog section where I have posted a couple of things, but we're also looking for writers. So if you have interesting opinions, if you are a person who wants to break into writing and wants to share your voice, we're looking for diverse opinions, all sorts of different people.
We're basically looking for anyone who's not a cisgender man. We definitely want you guys to be allies, but right now we're looking for other voices.
Yeah, and also we love our white women peers, but we're two white women sitting here, so we'd love more diverse voices.
Also, thank you so much to our producer, Caitlin Moldenhauer of More Banana Productions. Please check out all of the work from this all-women network, including World Stealers, There Will Be Porn, I'm Listening with Anita Flores, and Awkward Sex in the City with Natalie Wall, which is coming to you in July.
Yeah, More Banana Production is killing it.
Yeah, guys, we're kind of taking over the world. And don't forget to review us.
And subscribe and tell your friends.
Yeah.
And we're going to have merch soon.
Merch.
I don't know why that word always makes me think of Merkins.
Ooh.
Merkin merch.
Also, check out all of Rebecca's writing at franklyrebecca.com.
Da-da-da!
Da-da-da!
Yeah! All right.
See you next
Tuesday. See you next Tuesday.